Father, we're grateful for the morning and for the opportunity we have again to study your word together. Thankful for those who are online and those who are here. Just ask that your word might be something that would be helpful to us, as it is your word. Again, might the Spirit use it, guide our thoughts as we progress in study, and we'd be grateful for that. Amen. Now, our study of the mind this morning is going to take us into another context where we find the nous, the intellectual thinking faculty of the mind, used in kind of a negative context again. And this morning we're going to see it used as dealing with the nous as it relates to the fleshly mind, or the mind pertaining to the flesh. And so it does relate. If somebody is unsaved, this is the mind they have. If they're carnal, this is where their mind is going to be functioning. And so we'll notice that when we get over into chapter 2, but we'll be considering the context. But before we begin, and by way of introduction, I do want to just go a little bit into building up to where we are, where we're going to be studying. Now, the Apostle Paul, in chapter 2, he describes that they had not seen him face to face, many of those who were in Colossae. It wasn't a huge metropolis, kind of a church. It was a thriving town, but it also, but he hadn't been there. And he did know some of the people there, but he had met them, and as I mentioned before, at another time, they probably, well, I wouldn't say probably, they had to meet him when they went into the great city of Ephesus, and Paul was ministering there. And so he did lead some to the Lord, and he taught some of them there. And so there was one man in chapter 1, Epaphras. And so Epaphras was somebody who had taught them, and Paul had heard about their faith and their love, and he had heard these things from Epaphras, but he also knew some things about what was happening in Colossae. And so during this time, when Paul was now in prison, and as a Roman prisoner, he had heard about what was happening. And so he does give some warnings concerning some who were coming into the Lycus River Valley. And so you do have some who were there who were going to disrupt the teaching that Paul had given through Epaphras, and others perhaps, when they had been taught. They had been taught things. These were things Paul knew they had been taught, things that related to what Paul himself had taught to others at the time. But anyway, Paul knows they had been taught these things, and some of them had come into Ephesus and no doubt been personally taught by Paul as well. It doesn't fill in all of the detail. It just says they hadn't seen him to his face there in Colossae, but yet there were those who did. He did know personally. And so we move back to look at it. He's going to give some warnings. He's going to encourage them concerning some who were coming in and disturbing the saints there, making judgments about them, calling things, making, again, judgments, but they were making calls about them like an umpire. And so he uses a couple of verbs to describe something and uses them in imperatives to say you ought not to be, you need to stop those who are doing these behaviors. And so that's where we're heading to. But before we get there, I do want to notice that there were these who were heretics who had made their way into Colossae, and they were affecting the church in Colossae. And I'm just going to pick out a few verses here and there as we look at this. But we want to notice, we'll begin in verses 10 and 11 and see what Paul had heard. We're in Colossians chapter 1, and we're looking at, in the book of Colossians, and we're looking at Colossae, so we're coming back to chapter 1, but verse 10, that you might walk worthy, that you might walk in a manner worthy, with reference to the Lord, unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work, and increasing in the full experiential knowledge concerning God, being caused to be mighty with all and with all might, and all with, I'm going to retranslate, it says strengthened, but being caused to be inherently powerful, and with all inherent power unto all patience, long suffering and joy, joyfulness, and so on, with all joy, period. But, and then giving thanks and so on. But he'd heard about these saints, and he'd heard about their love, and their love, they were applying the new commandment one to another with love. But there were some issues that came on as well. And these issues, you can see them over in chapter 2. And we're just going to pick up in verse 8. He's talked about how they need to walk again. We looked at that last week when we, in our studies last week in Ephesians. But as you come back, they need to walk at the end of verse 6, chapter 2, verse 6 of Colossians. And so they need to be rooted and built up and established, made firm in the faith, as you have been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving. But notice he says next, beware. And when he says beware, beware is, blepo is the word to see, just a glance, just a simple look. And so they need to keep their eyes open. They need to be paying attention. And so keep your eyes open. Beware lest any man, lest there's some man, should spoil you. And so the word spoil here, it's not, it has the idea like carrying off spoils. And so if you went to, were out to war and you conquered somebody, you take the goods, you take spoils. This would have the idea of being carried off though. And so to be carried off, it could have the idea of being carried off or kidnapped. And so they would take them away from where they were instead of being established and being firmly founded here. But he says, they're going to be, they might, lest they should carry you away through philosophy. And he uses an article before philosophy, the philosophy, and that is the love of wisdom and empty, vain is empty here, kenos, empty deceit. Now the standard that they would carry them away would be after the tradition of men or by the, according to the standard of man, of men, after, according to the standard of the rudiments, the ABCs, the very basic elements of the world system, and not measured by the standard of Christ. And so they should have been ordering their lives by Christ, and that was very, very evident that that's what should happen. But there would be some who would come in and they would, they had their own doctrine, and they came in with the doctrines of men, the traditions of men, as well as the doctrines of men. And so they needed to keep their eyes open and watch for these individuals who would do that kind of a thing. But if you go on down in the context, we'll touch back here maybe just in conclusion as we have time. But anyway, he says in verse 20, and so Colossians 2, verse 20, wherein, since you are dead, intimately together with Christ from the ABCs, the rudiments are the ABCs, the basic elements, that is, of the world system. Why, as though living in the world, are you subject to ordinances or decrees? And so these had rules that they had established. And so you're doing these kinds of things. Which, and he goes on to describe these things in verse 21. Touch not, taste not, handle not, with which all are to perish with the using after the commandments and didaskalia, the doctrine to be believed but not practiced, it belongs to men or comes from men. And so this doctrine, they had doctrines, they taught, had their teachings, but these were things not that you didn't necessarily practice, but you believed it. And so he uses didaskalia here, which things are indeed a show of wisdom in a will worship, and this is worship that is self-devised, kind of a worship, and humility, and neglecting of the body, not in honor, to the satisfying or the gratification of the flesh. And so this is these were some problems. They were to be on the lookout for men who would teach this kind of stuff. But they would be teaching traditions and the philosophies and the empty deceit that belonged to the world system. The very basic elements of the world would be getting through to them. And so they would be teaching in these areas. And also these are the doctrines of men. And so he says, you pay attention, you keep your eyes open, you beware, you see, look after these kind of individuals, because they weren't just on their way, but they were already in the Lycus River Valley, already in Colossae, already affecting the church in Colossae. And so they needed to pay attention to look out for these kinds of people. And so he's going to deal with these issues. Now, these people, we will find indications they were fond of philosophy. They were fond of wisdom. And they thought they had a lot of knowledge. And so they thought they were pretty proud of their knowledge. They thought they were smarter than everybody else, wiser than anybody else. And this was something that was going around back at that time. Some refer to it as Gnosticism. From gnosis, knowledge, experiential knowledge, but these thought they knew a lot. Now, a lot of what is said here, Paul doesn't use the word gnosticism or to define them as Gnostics here, but what he described were things that were true of that group of people, those heretics who were going around and misinforming saints and trying to get them to follow their thoughts. And so apparently they already had some influence here in the church in Colossae. And so you had the church here, they'd been taught pretty well, but then on the other side of it, there were those there who were trying to disrupt things and to try to influence them and to drag them away, haul them off like captives or like to kidnap them and to move them into their realm of thinking. And so Paul does give some warning to these saints. And again, this is an unfavorable context that we look at with the news. Last week, we looked at Ephesians chapter 4, verse 17. And there we saw the unsaved mind is a useless mind. That's what the believer's mind, that's what our minds used to be when it came to the things of God, spiritual things. The mind was useless. And so the intellectual thinking faculty, it couldn't think God's thoughts with him. And it was just plain useless. And their dianoia, the thinking process that passed through the noose, that was also something that was darkened and they were alienated from God. Ephesians 4:17 and 18. But this morning, we come back and we find the noose connected to, the flesh, to the sarx, to the flesh, and so to the fallen nature of man. And so this is something that Paul will warn them about. Now, the word noose falls into a context of several things, that are negative things that these would have tried to influence the saints with. And so we're going to be looking at verses 17 or 16 through 19 specifically, and pick up a few verses around, maybe to explain some things. But as we come into this context, though, Paul warns them, he encourages them to stop letting anyone take them to draw them into things that are just shadows of things to come. And so there are things that were about to come which relate to the Christ, but they were drawing them away and judging them because of this. And so they didn't be careful not to be influenced by these who were heretics. And so he begins in verse 16. We'll just move right into the first part here. And the first verb that we find is it's a present active imperative. And so, and it is in the third person, and so it has the idea of don't allow them to continue, and that's the way we would say it. And so he says, when it says, let no man therefore judge you in food and drink or in drink. Now, when you look at this, let no man judge you, we'll look at the subject first. The subject is no man, and it's just a word, a negative term with a conjunction, and it says may dead ice. May dice is what it is. And so it's may dice in the Greek. May is a negative. And so it's a negative used with the present tense, and with the present imperative, it would say stop doing something. And I think we can do that, even though it's a compound word. It is a negative, though, and the death is a conjunction, which is a mild adversative conjunction, but can be translated, and here it would call, I would translate it even. Let no, and so he says, let not even ice, ice comes from ice with a rough breathing mark, which is the number one. And so he says, let no man, not even one. And so let no man, let not even one man, but don't let him do what? He says, let him not judge you, therefore. And so don't let him judge you. And this does go back up into the context with, we read a couple of the negative verses up above. And so he says, don't let him go on judging. You stop letting them judge you. And so it is kind of a permissive thing. Don't let him do it anymore. Stop allowing them to judge you, and that is they would be setting themselves as judges over the saints here in Colossae. And judge is just the simple word for judge. And so they don't let them judge you. And so these heretics, they were judging them. And we pick up some of the context here, but well, we'll just pick up the we'll keep moving in this verse, though, but he says, don't let them go on judging you in food, in meat, food, or in drink. Now, if you're looking at it interlinear, it probably leaves in drink out, but I would include it here. It's left out of the critical text, but I would think it has a lot of weight and support to do so. Food and drink. Well, this was something these heretics, some of them could have been Jews. We're dealing with a Gentile city, but there were Jews in the city. And so they could have been Jews. They could have been Gentiles, combination of them. Could have been one man, could have been more than one man that he's warning about. But he says, let no man therefore judge you in food or in drink. And so when it tells you what they're not to be judging them for, you have the first thing is in food and drink. Now we won't go back to the Old Testament to look at it, but you do have restrictions on food back in the Old Testament and what they could eat and drink. And so especially with food. And so there was a list of things that you could eat under law. There were things you couldn't eat under law. That would be kind of fitting for something that if it was a Jew who was the heretic, he would probably have a problem with that. And so we'd make judgment because these saints ate anything they wanted to. And that's the way it is today. And so in 1 Timothy chapter 4, down around verses 3, 4, 2, 3, 4, but 3 and 4, you can eat anything if you can give thanksgiving for it. And so today we don't have to say you can't eat this. This isn't clean. And so if they ate things, they would be unclean. If you drank some things, well, he says that in the dispensation of the grace from God, we have liberty, then you can. We looked at that in Romans 14 a while back, but we saw that there, that if you think you should only eat vegetables, then eat vegetables. But don't be judging the guy who eats meat. And if you're eating meat, don't look down on the guy who eats just vegetables. But you determine in your own mind what is right for you, but don't eat doubting, because if you do, you sin. And so that's Romans 14. But anyway, when you come into this, he says, don't let them judge you in food or drink. Now, there's some other things here, two other things that he lists first in verse 16. And he goes on to say, or in respect of an holy day. Now, when it comes to with respect to, it looks at category and the word with respect to, he says, in the category of feasts. And so the holy day here, it is just the normal word for a feast. And they could have just said feast. Well, again, you had Jewish feasts, and they had Gentiles, and their religion would have feasts as well. But the Jews, they would, but Paul even went to, he had to be in Jerusalem a couple times for Pentecost. And so but you had, they observed Passover, Pentecost, booths or tabernacles. And so they had feasts. But the Christians in Colossae, as any place else, they weren't required to beg to keep the feast days. And so again, that somebody who thought you should, and they were going by rules and establishing rules and going by traditions, whatever they were, they would have traditions, and they would say, you should be observing these days. Or it continues on, or of the quality of a new moon. Now, when it comes to the new moon, they didn't have our calendars. We did mention the calendars on the first in our study then, but they went by the lunar calendar, and so they went by the moon. And when you had the full moon, it was sort of like a holiday. And so this could be a holiday, and they wouldn't work, but take the day off. They might worship, and they would also eat. They might have a feast. They might eat and just kind of kick back, take it easy. But that was kind of what the new moons were involved with. And so they would kind of, the setup, they would go by these things religiously. It was kind of a religious thing, but or new moons. And so it is a new moon, and that's just, and it's new in time, that us with the word for moon. But or Sabbaths, or concerning Sabbaths, not just one Sabbath, but it's plural, the Sabbath days, but Sabbaths. And so they recognized, and the Jews were the ones who would go by the seventh day Sabbath. And so they would take the day off on the Sabbath, and they had rules and regulations under law concerning the Sabbath, what they could and couldn't do. But then they added a lot of tradition to those things also back in by this time in history. But he says, don't let them judge you on these things. You don't have to do these things, and you don't do these. And so don't let them judge you, and don't let them influence you, so that you maybe say, well, maybe I should do this, because the guy is making a judgment on him. And so, but he goes on to describe these things, he says, which are a shadow of the things about to come. The things that are fixed and are about to come, they're just a shadow. Now, what's a shadow? You can't pick up a shadow. It's just something. It's a light shining past something, and it leaves a shadow. But there's no substance to the shadow. It's not the real thing that is being, which is being, the light is shining on. It's just a shadow. It's nothing to it. And so he said, that's what these things are. All these regulations and rules that some man, it needs to stop judging. You need to stop letting it judge you on these things, because these things are just shadows of things to come. But then he draws a contrast here. But he says, the body is the Christ. It pertains to the Christ. And so he comes back to it. It is articular here. And if you went back to 1 Corinthians 12:12, you see that the body is one body, but many members, one body. But he says, so also is the Christ. I believe Paul is using it in that sense here, because he is dealing with the head and the body together. And Christ is the head, and we are the body. He's going to bring up the head in a little bit here. But anyway, he says, these are just, there's nothing to these things. There's no substance to them. And so don't let some man judge you, or anybody. Don't let anybody do so to judge you. Now, as you go on, you know, I don't know what I did, but the first, I just went back and I got to thinking about it, moving into the next verse. You do have made eyes. Made eyes doesn't occur in verse 16. And so in verse 16, that just popped out of my head. But it is a present active imperative used with an indefinite pronoun, so don't let anyone. You stop letting someone do this. And so I just made a Change to let no man. But you come into verse 18 and you do have a maid ice as the subject here. And I didn't, wasn't looking at the Greek text as going for the English in my memory. So anyway, we come to verse 18 though, and we do have maid ice. And here it says, let no man beguile you of your reward. And so don't let him beguile you of your reward. If you wanted one word, you could say, don't let him defraud you of your reward. The word reward here is the word for a prize. And so we'll look at that word in a moment. But to look at it's not a very frequently occurring term, but it is something that we have been through passages where we have seen this, and maybe we're familiar, but it doesn't occur a whole lot anyway. And so he says that let no man, don't even let one man, and with a may it could be you stop letting even one man, and don't let him defraud you, beguile you of your prize. And so we need to spend a moment looking at that word beguile. It only occurs here. It is a compound word. And we do find that the word that's not used with the prepositional prefix, we do find it used again as a verb one time and as a noun twice. And so we will look at those references in a moment. But it has the, with the preposition kata in front of it, it just makes a kind of a, you're doing some, making a call downwards. And so it's down. And so it takes a negative thing here. Don't let them do this. It's not a good thing that they're doing. And beguile sounds bad. Defraud would sound bad as well. But it, let's go ahead and look at the use of the noun form. It only occurs twice. We were in this context in our new study at some time, but go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, this term, it is the noun form. And so, okay. First Corinthians 9, we're going to be down to verse 24, and he's dealing a comparison of the Christian life with a race and with a boxing match, and he's comparing it to these things where there's an athletic contest anyway. And so he says, don't you know that they which run in a race run all? And the way you ask it, yes, you know that. And so they do know factually that this is, that all who run a race, they all run. But, now the contrast, but one, only one receives the prize. And so that's the noun form of this verb without the prepositional prefix. And so this is looking at the prize. So he receives the prize. So it doesn't use the normal term for a reward, but this is you're running for a prize. And so he says, so run that you may obtain, so that you may receive a prize. So you might receive a prize. So you need to take care of your body to do so. Well, the word prize here, you do run for a prize. They would receive be payable victor's wreath, a stephanos, but we receive an incorruptible one. We do keep our bodies maintain self-control as part of the fruit of the Spirit. We do have a reward for that. Philippians chapter 3 is the next place where we find this. And so Philippians chapter 3 and verse 14, again, you're dealing with the prize. And so you're looking at a prize, something that you can win, a prize kind of. And so Paul uses a term here, and I connected back to 1 Corinthians 9:24, but when you come to chapter 3 and verse 14, Paul says he hasn't arrived yet in his Christian life, though relatively he is mature, but hasn't reached the end, and he never will in this life, none of us will. But he goes on in verse 14, when it says, I press toward the mark Let me just retranslate that a little bit for you. The word press is the verb dioko means to pursue. It can also be used to persecute, but it is the word to pursue. And so he says, I am pursuing. But he's coming towards the mark. He's coming down upon the mark. The word towards is kata. That has a downward concept. So I would just say, I'm bearing down on the mark. Now the mark here is the goal. And so he's like a runner. He's stretching out as he's running the race. He's stretching out to touch the, to cross the line. And so he's bearing down on it, putting all his effort into it. But the mark, unto the prize of the upward calling, the high calling or the upward calling, from God in Christ Jesus. And so he's pressing down for an upward prize though. And there's the word prize. That's the word, that's the noun form, in its simple form of the word that is translated beguiled. But we see it that it relates, this is the prize. And so he's pressing towards the brevus, the prize. And so that's used in its simple form. Now the upward calling, this is in his present tense salvation. And let me just say something about this verse. It isn't saying that he's pursuing and he's putting effort into it. He's bearing down on the goal to be raptured. It's not the rapture here, but he is dealing with his present tense salvation. He hasn't arrived yet, but he's heading towards the goal. And he is relatively mature. He'll tell you in a couple of verses later. But when you when you look at this though, I would parallel this over to Colossians chapter 3:1-2. You're to seek the things which are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. That's the upward calling. Get your mind up there. And that's where he's focusing as he moves on to maturity. The more he focuses, the more he's going to be able to move on to maturity. And that's the goal that he's pressing on towards. And it's for the prize of the up calling, though. The goal is to reach that so he gets the prize with his focus where it ought to be. And he's going, and so he frames his mind on things above, Colossians 3:2, and not on things on the earth, but he is making progress, and he has made progress. And so we're all someplace someplace in the realm of maturity. We're all someplace, but none of us have arrived yet, and we won't in this life, but we will be changed when we see Christ, and we will be changed physically, will be changed within, and we will change our whole life at that time. But we